You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
He's got his own beliefs. My lover's got no money. He's got his own beliefs.
Hello and welcome back to the Big Strong Leicester Boys podcast, where, 3 points finally. It's been a long time coming, hasn't it? Dean Smith's first win as the Leicester City manager. Leicester, we'll have to see how long for, but moving out of the relegation places for now. A 2-1 win over Wolves at the weekend. We head into a really, you know, important run of games. Leeds up next, and there's games against Fulham and Everton. And that was the perfect way to get those four games going. So, look, delighted to say we've got a win to talk about, but even more delighted to say we've got Jack, Rick and Jordan on the podcast today. Quick mention as well, delighted to say as well, got Darren Eady, former Leicester winger, joining us in about 10 or so minutes' time. Of course, Darren, best known for his time in Norwich, which where, of course, Dean Smith has been most recently at. So we want to hear all about Dino from Darren. He's going to join us in about 10 minutes' time. But look, let's talk about this win first and foremost. Rick, I'm going to come to you first, mate. I didn't think it was particularly pretty, but it felt so, so good when that whistle went at the end.
You're talking about me or the football? yeah, it was. It wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game, but we battled well. And to be honest, I much prefer watching a performance like that than trying to play supposedly better football and not getting a result. No, exactly what we needed. In spells, we played some decent football. It just felt like we knew what was on the line, and for periods of the game, we did toil a little bit. But you know, once we realised the magnitude of where we were at, when we got back to 1-1, we were the far better team second half. It just feels so good, doesn't it? Because we were hoping that Dean Smith might evoke something, but yeah, until we got that first win, it was a pipe dream to actually think about staying up. But we've got a chance now. It's in our hands, isn't it?
That's the beauty of it, my friends. It really is. Jack, as I said, it wasn't particularly pretty. And I thought the first half, I thought we were really quite bad and fortunate to go in level, if I'm brutally honest. But the parts, well, there was plenty, though, from the performance that I did like in the end. And there was that fighting spirit. And I can't help but feel that a few weeks ago, when we had either the caretakers or Brendan, we would have lost that game. I do think that Dean did get a reaction out of those players. And as I said, there were elements about that which I really, really liked about that performance. Not so much the football, but the fact that they did grind that out when they really had to.
Yeah, it was different to what we used to. I thought first 5 minutes, I thought we were electric. Tete had quite a good chance. Vardy squared it to him. Unlucky not to score, probably. But then after that, it was really poor. Obviously, Yuri made a mistake, which was disappointing. And I think after about 35 minutes, I sent a message saying, can you just end the season now? Because I know which way it's going. But Iheanacho sets up Vardy, who actually, you know, put shift in the first half and did do one or two things that were quite useful. But second half, I thought we played some decent stuff. I thought there were some really good performances from a couple of people. I think, as you say, I agree, it's there was a lot of battle And a bit of fight. I thought, I mean, he's got loads of plaudits today, but I thought Soyuncu was outstanding, got his head on everything, was wrestling Diego Costa, looked like he'd never been. I mean, to be honest, I think that's one of his best performances for us in total. But, you know, the noise when that second goal went in was just so, so good. I haven't heard the King Power that noisy in a very, very long time. So yeah, there's lots to build on. As you say, like a really big week this week, two massive games coming up.
Yeah, no, that performance from Cags, I thought, just oozed class. I really did think he did. And that battle against Diego Costa clearly relished it. So yeah, really enjoyed him. And we'll talk about some of the other individuals. But Jordan, as far as that mistake goes, and look, we don't want to dwell too much on the negatives, but you know, when Yuri gives that away and we're punished for it, you know, as Jack said, he's kind of thinking, well, here we go again. And in my mind, I'm sat there thinking about the podcast, thinking, right, what's the title? You know, Leicester City, the gift that keeps on giving. And, you know, it's felt that all season that, you know, we give away and these goals and we're punished for them, which feels like every single time. And ordinarily, it will, so far this season, more often than not, we've then really struggled to get our heads up and back into the game. And look, as I touched on at the start, I actually thought that we then did really struggle after we did let that goal in. I don't think the performance was very, very good, but clearly whatever Dino did say to them at half-time worked, because the difference in that second half performance from the first was chalk and cheese. Because yeah, at half-time I sat there thinking, this ain't great still. You know, I'm still really incredibly concerned. But you know, whatever he did say at half-time clearly did work, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I have to clarify, I wasn't at the game yesterday. I was at Chelsea's wedding. So when Wolves went 1-0 up, we were all, we're outside at that point, but you had that sinking feeling again. And I don't know who was on COCOMs for the highlights I watched, but she blamed Fez for the goal and didn't even mention that Yuri gave the ball away 20 yards out. Really? Or 25 yards out. And she said, oh, Fez, you know, John Terry would be disappointed with Fez for turning his back. I thought, well, he didn't have a chance. Like, Yuri's give the ball away. What's he supposed to do? Mm-hmm. But, you know, to come back from behind, I can't remember the last time when we did come back from behind. You know, like I say, I've seen the highlights, spoke to people who were there. It sounded like Soyuncu and Samari in the second half were colossus. And I've been very critical of Samari. I feel a bit for Yuri in terms of, you know, he's at fault for that goal, but he scored some absolute screamers this season in games, you know, one against Wolves away, that have got his points, and he's come back into the team and he's he looks a bit weighty. He looks weighty at the best of times. So when he's been out, yeah, I mean, like you say, whatever Dean has said at half time has clearly worked. And you know, when I've seen the winner, you've got your left back crossing to your right back to score and look like the two highest players on the pitch. And you know, that sort of slow, ponderous football that we were playing under Rodgers before he got sacked, you wouldn't have seen the two fullbacks that high. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Castagna, so I was delighted for him when he scored. You could see what it meant to him when he scored. Also nice to see Riyad comment on his tweet underneath. But, I mean, it's a start. That's all it is. I did feel like if we won yesterday, it would give us a huge chance of getting someone at Leeds. And if we can beat Leeds, leapfrog them, and then Everton at home on Monday night. And from what I'm told, the atmosphere was the best it's been.
Yeah, it was.
Since the Champions League days. My dad said, one of the Wolves fans said on the way out, it's the best home atmosphere he's seen all season. And that's very rare you can say that about the King Power, but it needs to be like that for the run-in, because that's going to give us an extra boost. And you know, fair play to Smith, because when I saw that lineup, and I think when most people saw that lineup, I just thought, what on earth are we playing here? Like, it looked like it almost picked the team out of the hat, especially the front four or five. And it's worked. And it, you know, it doesn't matter how we play; it's just about getting those points on the board. And huge start, and we've got to get something now at Elland Road.
Yeah, I mean, we cannot understate just how important that win was, because, you know, psychologically, if we'd lost that home game again against a team like Wolves, I honestly not entirely sure we would have then recovered from that for the rest of the season. Look, I'm conscious Darren's going to join us very shortly, but Rick, before we do, I want to then kind of talk about Soumaré, because he has received lots of plaudits. I mean, I found it once again a little bit bizarre, and look, I'm more than happy for you guys to disagree with me. But I thought first half in particular, he was absolutely awful again. I really did think he was. You know, I thought that we were so easy to play around and play through. And he just never really seemed close enough to where he needed to be. But then in the second half, he was absolutely outstanding. And that's kind of been the frustration, isn't it? I'm thinking, you know, a performance that we've mentioned and talked about before with Soumaré was the Napoli game at home last season, where he was kind of similar, where he was outstanding in one half. And I'm just waiting for him to deliver me 90 minutes and to do it, you know, back-to-back games and then again and again, because, you know, we've all been very critical of him, and I have in particular, you know. But he was outstanding in that second half. But I don't want to just have one of these situations where we say, oh, he had a good second half, and then he goes back to kind of being not useless, but do you know what I mean? You know, I now need him to really kick on from this, because clearly, once again, he has shown that there is a player there.
Yeah, I think you're right. We can't pretend that first half he was excellent, because none of them really were for Leicester. We were being overrun. I mean, Smith was essentially playing 4-2-4. Tielemans was having a bit of a stinker in the first half as well. So I don't think Soumaré was necessarily poor in the first half. He just, we were getting played through quite easily. And there was still a couple of moments first half. I think he released Iheanacho for one of his runs. But second half, like, that's the Soumaré that we need. You know, the amount of times under Rodgers that you could actually hear Rodgers and his staff saying, Booba, run, 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 because they were actually having to tell him to do the basics. And yet he was doing that second half. And I don't know whether Smith and Shaky and JT were having to do that, but I don't think they were. And what impressed me the most about him yesterday, he got booked on about, what, half an hour, 60 minutes. And I thought, oh, he's just starting to really get into the game as well. But I worry now. We were well in on top. And if he made a stupid challenge, he was gone. And I thought, is he going to either get dragged or is he going to just sort of shrink? And he got better. He got more energetic. He got better in the tackle. I mean, he dribbling out of defence was from, you know, from the defence into midfield, and it was unbelievable. You know, that's what we were told we were getting. And we've seen scant evidence of it. But yeah, it's one half. And he put a masterclass on away at West Ham before the World Cup. And then there's nothing. So he's got to follow it up, but he's there. And the fact that they've picked him, I was so shocked that they picked him yesterday, because I didn't feel like he was on their radar. I wouldn't have thought he was the player they'd want. And yet, having thought about it, the quick transition, being able to get the ball forward, he is, isn't he? He's better than Ndidi at doing that. He's probably better than Mendy at doing that as well. So let's just hope he can kick on from this. You know, he's obviously a bit of a mercurial character. Said that word wrong. But yeah, like, they need to coerce him into a bit of confidence, motivation, whatever. You know, Maddison after the game on the socials was praising him. And there's a player in there. There is. And, you know, he's got such a unique game that we, you know, that we need to get the best out of him. But it was great to see. He was. Him and Soyuncu were just, that second half, you know, under pressure. Our players have shrank for months, and both of them have been peripheral players. They didn't care about it, did they? They were like, they were happy to just to take the ball by the horn. So yeah, long may it continue. Follow it up Tuesday. But it was great to see.
Yeah, no, it really was. Booba Soumaré, hopefully, finally, we're starting to see what kind of player we've got there. Look, still to come, we will do Who Are You? And, of course, then look ahead to Leeds United, a fairly quick turnaround on that one. But delighted to say now, we're joined by the former Leicester City man and Norwich winger, the brilliant Darren Eady. Darren, hello, mate. How are we doing?
I'm very well, Jake. How are you, you big, long, ugly thing?
Yeah. Cheers, mate. I'm very well. I'm very well indeed. Yeah, so we probably allude to the fact you don't come on all shows and podcasts and just abuse the host straight away. We do know each other. We've known each other quite a while.
Yeah, we have. And I don't know if the guys who are watching as well and still know that Jake was supposed to have a Teemu Pukki tattoo on his arse cheek. because he said, look, Timmy wouldn't score 10 goals in the Premier League, and he's still not carried that through. So every time I see him, I do remind him of that fact. He's absolutely bottled it.
I was with you when he scored his 10th goal as well, Jake, and you were about to delete Twitter and throw your phone in the river.
Right. So, yeah, I should probably add context to this one. I knew you were going to say this as well, and I was actually in half a mind to not get you on because I knew you were going to throw me under the bus once again. So when Norwich got promoted back to the Premier League, not last time, it was the time before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a few years ago now. So, and then Pookie scored something like 6 or 7 in his first, 8 or 9. And yeah, stupidly, when I was doing another show with Darren, I said that Pookie wouldn't score 10. And if he did, I'd get a tattoo of him on my backside. But, and there is something key here, COVID then happened, Darren shaking his head. I was genuinely going to get the tattoo. I really was. Then COVID happened and there was a big long break. And then I just decided that it really kind of wasn't worth it then because people had lost interest in the bet. And I just thought it's quite a commitment getting that on your backside, isn't it? If then people aren't bothered anymore.
I haven't lost interest. I'm still bringing it up years later. So there's still interest there, mate. You're the one who's deflecting it.
Right. Okay. Maybe I'll make another equally stupid bet at some point and actually, and follow through with it as long as there's not another global pandemic. But look, let's talk about Leicester and in particular, Darren, I want to talk about Dean Smith. Because, yeah. You know, you're a Norwich City legend. You still live and work in Norwich. So you know Dean very well. We got our first win at the weekend with Dean Smith now as the manager. And look, you know, as you'll be fully aware, it's been a bit of a god-awful season for us. And it was a bit of a shit show, to be honest, when the managerial change happened because nobody seemed to know what on earth we were doing, really. And when Dean did come in, it was a little bit underwhelming. We won't lie, and I think that's fair. But what we have seen in the last couple of games has been encouraging. But I'm just interested to kind of get your take on what your thoughts were when first of all Dean came in and then also what you know of the guy, having spent quite a lot of time with him in Norwich over the last, 18 months or so.
Well, I can totally understand the underwhelming feeling from Leicester fans, because when a manager gets sacked from a club in the Championship, you don't expect them to be taken over a Premier League hunt, a survival bid. And that's essentially what it was for Leicester. It was a massive job for him. But the one thing I would say for Dean Smith was he inherited a team at Norwich, which he clearly didn't want at the time, struggled after Daniel Farke had already been sacked. And we've seen since that David Wagner's gone in and struggled as well. So ultimately, you know, there's only so much you can do as a manager with the group of players you've got. And I think that's showing at the moment in terms of Norwich's form as well. So, you know, I think the one big thing Dean Smith didn't have was the connection with the supporters that Farke had. But that's just his personality. He's a very different personality. Norwich had such a successful time under Farke. That he was very emotional with the fans. He would get up and sort of, you know, do the wave and stuff for them, the little players up to the fans after a game. And Dean Smith was almost the opposite, kind of old school manager, you know, stood back from that, kind of stood back from the fans. So it was nothing to do with his managerial qualities, I don't think. It was just the quality of the players he had wasn't good enough to be able to make a difference at Norwich, and the relationship with the fans. So I was surprised to see him step back in so quickly in such a big job. But I have to say, I think I'm sure you've probably already talked about it. I'm sure a big factor in that was Shaky in the background after the history that he already has with Leicester. So I think looking at it as the bigger picture, it was a smart move on Leicester's behalf to get someone in who knows the club straight away in terms of his backroom staff and assistant in Shaky, and hopefully he hits the ground running. That's the type of thing when the club's struggling, you need someone like that who's going to kind of galvanise the people already there, you know, regular face that people already know at the football club. They've got success already. And I'm sure that will be down to Dean Smith, but it will also be down to Shaky on the training ground, kind of galvanising those players he already knew from the past, and just trying to get back that kind of, feel-good feeling that Leicester would have had during those really good times. Look, we all know it's going to be tough. I watched Leicester from afar. My dad's a massive Leicester fan, was born and bred in Leicester, so when I signed there, he was absolutely buzzing. So I've got history in Leicester and I love my time there. It just wasn't long enough. So it's been difficult to watch this season. It has been really difficult to watch, as I'm sure as for every single Leicester fan. But I've always felt they've got the quality to get out of it. But it did need that change. I think it was the right thing to do. I don't believe for one second Brendan Rodgers is a poor manager. He's going to walk into another fantastic job. But it needed that change just to ignite something within those group of players and hopefully drag themselves out of it. And the quality they've got, you look throughout the squad, there's some real quality there. Lots of injuries this season. And when you're getting those sort of key players back, you get a couple of results. Things seem to look a lot better. And for me at the minute, as I say, I think a lot of the work we've been done on the training field was shaky behind the scenes, making this group tick for as long as it can to get themselves out of trouble.
Yeah, it's interesting, Darren, what you said about the fans' relationship with the manager, because, you know, again, with my association with Norwich, you know, I know that how much the Norwich fans love Daniel Farker, and you know, Dean had that same relationship with the Aston Villa fans, and
yeah.
You know, and you can look kind of around all the clubs, and you know, I'm already feeling, and I haven't mentioned this to the lads, it'd be interesting to get their take on it, some kind of similarities between like a Nigel Pearson character and a Dean Smith. And you know, Nigel Pearson was such a good fit at Leicester. And sometimes managers can be just good fits to certain clubs. And it's weird with Brendan, in complete honesty, Darren, because he was here for, 4 years? And was very successful. And you can make arguments that he's one of our most successful ever managers. But there never really felt like a huge connection between the manager and the fan base. You know, and already, you know, after, you know, one home game, the fans are chanting Dean Smith. And we very, very rarely did that. For Brendan, and then you mentioned that Dean never really had that connection with the Norwich fans, and
yeah,
you know, it makes such a difference, doesn't it, at a football club when you have that link and that bond between the manager and the fans. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, but that only comes from results. If Dean Smith had gone and lost all of his games since he's been there, they wouldn't be singing his name. The fact he's got a reaction and they've got a couple of results changes things. So I totally agree that, but it's not just players. You know, sometimes it's not just managers. Sometimes players fit a club, and likewise, a club will fit a player. You know, we look at Harry Kane as a great example of that. Someone who's been around everywhere, came to Norwich, went to Leicester, Forest, was absolutely awful. Looked like he'd never played football before. Goes back to Spurs, and now he's achieved what he has. So sometimes it does just click, and it does just fit. But you have to kind of—it's a bit of a puzzle. You know, you have to put the pieces together and hope they all go in the right order, and you get all the right pieces in the right place. But I don't think Dean Smith's going to be this tactical genius he's gone into, but what he will do with Shaky is galvanise the group of players that he's had there previously. And I think that's been a big factor in the decision of bringing him in. I think if Dean Smith hadn't had Shaky with him, I'm not sure he would have got the job. I honestly don't. I believe it's such a big part. And I think we all know how much of an influence Shaky had over in the title winning team and with Ranieri. So I think it was inevitable with Dean Smith alongside him, that was the right option for them at the time. I don't believe for a second if Dean Smith would have had another backroom staff, that he would be in a job. I really believe that.
Yeah, and I think as well with John Terry, that's a huge factor, because John didn't go with him to Norwich, did he?
No, he didn't. But again, a massive character that players are immediately going to respect and look up to. And I think when you're in a battle down the bottom of the Premier League, when you've got, I wouldn't say big egos, but you're dealing with big players. You're dealing with Premier League players that have actually won big trophies. You know, you need someone who's going to have that charisma to go in there and shake things up a little bit and actually be able to potentially shout and ball at them a little bit. And you know, they can't turn around and go, well, what have you done? Because they've done it all. So, you know, you get that immediate reaction. And John Terry, more than anybody, will get that. And actually, the one place, and hearing you guys speak before, that Leicester have struggled this season is defensively, probably more than anything. And you know, there's no better influence to have in the dressing room than someone like John Terry, kind of, you know, giving his best thoughts on how he thinks things can improve. And sometimes that's not a tactical thing. That's just, as a central defender, that good old kind of, like you were, Jake, that horrible, nasty centre-half. The most timid centre-half I've met live, Jake, by the way. Yeah. But no,
you know, too nice.
Yeah, he is. But to have those kind of players around you in the dressing room, this stage is exactly what they need. It'd be interesting to see, come the end of the season, if Leicester do stay up, which, you know, I think they will and I hope they will, what they do? Do they offer Dean Smith a longer contract? I mean, I don't know what you guys have been thinking about that. Is that something that you kind of hear around the club? The whispers are, if he keeps them up, he'll get the job longer term?
Yeah, I don't think we've heard that. I think, you know, of course, you know, if he does keep them up, there's got to have a conversation at the end of it. But there don't appear to be any kind of obligation. But yeah, it all depends, doesn't it, on how things go between now and the rest of the season. Jack, what did you want to ask Darren?
When you were talking about charismatic managers, Darren, it twigged a thought in my mind. So you obviously played under Martin O'Neill, who, funnily enough, was linked with the job a while back, but obviously absolute legend at Leicester and the football club. And I just wondered what it was like to play for him, and if you got any stories about sort of his management style and the dressing room.
How long have you got? I mean, he's one of those managers. It's just, I've got a huge amount of time for him. I was at Norwich as a young kid when he came in from Wickham, did really well. We were sitting pretty in the Championship, looking to get back into the Premier League. He then buggered off to Leicester, didn't he? So, and then, you know, it always tracked me. It always kept in touch in my time when I was playing at Norwich. And I think it's inevitable when Norwich were financially struggling at the time, they're going to go into administration. He jumped on it straight away. And obviously I became the record signing at the time. And I remember my medical at the football club. And I'd had operations on my knee before. And the physios and all that were in there. The surgeons were there. And I had all the scans and everything. They said, look, he could play for another 16 years, 6 years, or, you know, 6 months. We don't know with his knee. So he has had issues, but we don't really know. And Martin just turned around and said, I don't care. I want to sign him. So it was that kind of confidence he installed in players. But it wasn't just that. He would know how to treat different players as well. He would put his arm around those ones he felt needed it, like Steve Guppy. You know, literally, he couldn't do anything wrong. When there was other players, he absolutely hated them, but he would hammer them every single day. But he would get the best out of them on the pitch because they wanted to almost prove him wrong. So he knew how to deal with this, you know, different types of characters within the dressing rooms. And he was a manager that you'd only ever see on a Friday, you know, Friday and the weekend. And I liked that. I liked as a player, I liked a bit of distance between my manager and the squad. I think sometimes if the manager's there every single day, there becomes a little bit of familiarity, and familiarity breeds contempt, as they say. And I felt that, you know, you kind of lose that little edge. But Martin O'Neill, for me, stayed away at the right times. And when he turned up on a Friday, you know, we all kind of were on our toes and ready to perform for him at a weekend. But yeah, he was a, I wouldn't say a strange character, but you could certainly see the influence he had from Brian Clough, without a doubt. And as did Paul Lambert, who then followed, you know, alongside Martin O'Neill. It was amazing to watch the kind of progression of those three and almost be clones of each other. But Martin was, I remember when I first signed, actually, I think we were playing Leeds away, and I'd literally just signed, so the team already in the hotel. So I had to go up with the physio, Paul Franklin at the time, was actually involved with Leicester. I had to drive up with Paul Franklin up to Leeds to meet the team to play the game the next day. And we drove up to the hotel, and we sort of get into the hotel, and the lads are already in having their sort of evening meal. So I went through, said hello to the lads, and I'm looking around thinking, where's the manager? Surely he's got to be. I'm a new signing. You know, I said, well, where is he? And bear in mind, this is Yorkshire. It was in the middle of, I think it must have been January, February, so it's like December when I signed. So it was like dark outside. I remember it like lightning and thunder, raining was lashing down. It's horrendous outside. I said, where's the gaffer? And he said, he's gone out in a taxi to the Yorkshire Ripper's house. And I'm going, what? But that was the type of thing he did. So he got a taxi from the hotel to where the Yorkshire Ripper lived. So I kind of got the taxi to leave him there for about an hour or so he could kind of take it all in, and then got a taxi back to the hotel later. So it's just those, but that obviously, you know, I think there's been stories about him sitting in the dock on different cases and stuff like that. So he's so interested in the psychological side of humanity. And I think he brought that certainly into his management skills in dealing with different people and different characters. And that's what I liked about him so much, because he was just a man manager. You know, he'd treat everybody different. Sometimes you get a manager that looks, you know, I'll treat everybody the same. I like the ones actually, you know, he looked into me and see what I needed to get the best out of me, as he did others. And that could be a bollocking, that could be putting his arm around you. But that was certainly an eye-opener. I mean, he was just a brilliant character. You know, there's some stories I can't tell from trips away. The infamous trip when we got caught in La Manga, when I think it was the physio had a £50 note stuck on his forehead in the Forest, thing which was let off by Stan Collymore. All these things were going on in the hotel, and then, because he wasn't there at the time, but he said, yeah, you can have a go out, but don't be stupid. And you know, saying that to like Jerry Taggart and Neil Lennon and Sav and Muzzy and you know, Steve Walsh and Matty Elliott, it's just like red rag to a bull, isn't it? You can't tell them not to go out and not be stupid. So as you can imagine, it all got a bit out of hand. And then it was all over the press the next day. And he was then, Martin O'Neill wasn't flying out. So he flew out to the, and we were all put in this like seminar room waiting for him, all sat there, all hung over from the night before. And then we had to have this team meeting because we knew it all kicked off, and literally bashed the doors open, these two doors, had his sort of suit jacket on, threw it onto the floor. And I've never seen players like Matty Elliott, Jerry Taggart, Steve Walsh look in fear with their eyes, but they had it that day. I've never seen anything like it. He's got stuck into every single player in there, and I feared, I almost thought he was going to have a heart attack at one point because he just didn't stop. And it was one of those moments where you think, you know, this is a bit of a moment in our careers. But obviously, we then went on to win the cup at the end of that year as well, the League Cup. But I even remember when we got back to the hotel, back to the airport, they sort of put us in a coach and drove us out the back way of the airport because they didn't want all the press taking pictures when we went through. And it's one of those coaches that had the black windows, so they couldn't take pictures. But as we're driving out of the exit, the rear exit, there was still loads of press on there. On their step ladders and stuff like that, and all these flashes start going off, and you think, bloody hell, there's loads of press here as well. And I remember sitting next to Muzzy, or opposite Muzzy at the time, and I think there's a picture of it in the papers the next day. Muzzy's like flicking the V's and sticking his finger up to him at the window because he think they can't see, but they had this black window penetrating flashes that would get through that, and he didn't realise. So obviously that then came out in the press the next day as well, that we'd sort of, you know, didn't care and all this. But it was look, I often talk about the year I played in at Norwich and Leicester, and for me, that for me was like football at its most purest. I think there was enough protection for players, but you could also have a proper tackle. There was, you know, you look at the game now, if it's not goals you're scoring, there's nothing really else to get you up as a crowd. Whereas back in the day, a little bit, you know, a good tackle or something like that would get the crowd lifted again and get every, you know, there's that kind of drive you need as players to get going again. So I feel as if I played in the era where the Premier League was at its best, if you can say that. I mean, I'm sure the modern day fan might disagree because they'll think, you know, they want to watch this beautiful football. But sometimes 90s football, Premier League football, when you're playing the likes of United with Cantona and stuff like that, and Giggs and Beckham and Scholes, it was just ridiculous. And then you got the Invincibles of Arsenal as well. And I actually remember getting sent off there as well. I got 2 yellow cards at Arsenal in the cup for Leicester. And I actually stayed on the pitch for about 5 minutes. It's only because they were the first one to have a TV screen up in the corner. And it came up on there and it had Edie and 2 yellow cards next to it. So all their players were like, ref, look on the board. He didn't know. He missed the first yellow booking. So then obviously he got sent off. But then we went through and we beat him in the second leg at our place and went through and obviously won the cup that year.
Jordan.
Darren, thanks for joining us, mate. You mentioned earlier that, you know, your time at Leicester just wasn't long enough. I mean, obviously, you had the worst luck with injuries. I think these days it might have been a bit different with all the technology available. Might have helped. But I just wanted to ask you, because a lot's been made of our injury record, and a lot of it was kind of levelled at Rodgers. You know, we've got a Seagrave training facility, which is absolutely incredible. But you've got the likes of Justin, Ricardo, who has just got the worst luck with injuries. But mentally, you touched on like what O'Neill said about the psychological aspect. Like, what is it like? How hard is it when you keep getting injured and you keep getting setbacks mentally? And, you know, Tielemans came back in the team yesterday. He's been out and was at fault for the goal. I mean, I imagine it just can't be easy. And especially for Ricardo, I think he's broke his leg, done his ACL, done his Achilles, and now his hamstring's playing up. I mean, it's just like a litany of injuries that he keeps getting, and it's not the same one.
Yeah, it's horrific. When you have a serious injury, something like that, you come back into a team and you almost, not overprotect it, but you almost force yourself to test it almost, and you kind of use different muscles, and obviously then other things start to hurt. And you can, it's like when you get a dead leg, isn't it? You get a dead leg and you play the next game, you guarantee you're going to get smashed on the dead leg. It's just one of those things. Psychologically, it's really difficult to deal with. That the hardest part is just not feeling part of it. You know, whether the team's winning or losing, it's just feeling isolated in terms of not being around the squad, because you know you're in separate rooms, you're training differently, you're not traveling away. Psychologically, it's you feel very isolated, and I think that's the hardest part to kind of get over for a player with a long-term injury. It does take strength. It takes mental strength to get through it, but that's only time that can do that. But the one thing I would say, the only regret I probably had at Leicester when I'd have my final injury, which kind of finished my career, when I was told you basically can't play anymore. And I woke up in the room and the surgeons were there, my wife at the time, and the physio was there, the club doctor was there, my agent was there. And I'm thinking, this is a bit strange, all in here. And obviously they turned around and said, your career's over. I mean, I'd had 22 operations, I think, on my knee at the time. And I'm like, well, I've had 22 before. 23 will be all right. So to be told from one day to the next you're a Premier League footballer to then you're not, your career's over, was like just a massive, I don't know, you kind of lose your sense of purpose completely. I had no idea what I was going to do from one day to the next. And that was the most difficult part. But it's it's a really tough time to deal with. But I think if you're mentally strong, the biggest, as I said, the biggest thing it's not a regret, but at the time I remember them saying to me, you could have the same operation again with the same outcome. But you could do that and it would take another 18 months before you're remotely fit. And I was 28 at the time and I was in a lot of pain from the first operation. And I've been damaged from it. And I was on this machine called a complex machine, which used to bend my knee. I literally lay down on this platform sort of thing. And it was just literally bend my knee like that all for 8 hours a day straight. And I'm like, this is mentally destroying me. And I couldn't do it. And I couldn't face the fear of having to do that again with potentially having the same outcome. So for me, it was like, I'll sack it off. I can't do it anymore. I can't possibly do that. But looking back on it now, I probably wish I would have maybe done it. But, you know, we all have regrets on it. Whether it made any difference or not, I don't know. But I would say for them, just to try and keep themselves in and around the players as much as they can. Don't isolate themselves. Keep mixing with the lads, feeling part of the group. And that's down to the football club as well, to make sure that happens. Don't let him just be in a treatment room. Don't let him just be in the gym. Get him in when the other lads are in at the same time. Get him out on the training pitch to watch and be around them and have a laugh and a joke with them, and take him on away trips and stuff as well. Be part of it. So I think psychologically that can help. Because it is, when you first come back, it's really difficult. I never had the opportunity to do that. But obviously, I came back from lots of other injuries. And it takes a bit of time to... You're talking probably at least a dozen, 15, 20 games before you feel back to yourself, remotely back to yourself, before you feel like you were before you got that injury.
Rick?
Yeah, Darren, I just wanted to... touching on what Jack said about Martin O'Neill, I want to ask you about a probably polar opposite in Leicester City's eyes, Peter Taylor. Now, you probably played more under Taylor, did you, than Martin? I remember you got the winner at Upton Park. I think it was the first time we won there in years. I remember you'd had a bit of a run there and we got to the top of the league and everything was hunky-dory, wasn't it? And then, sadly, he put us in a similar situation to what Rodgers has done. Hopefully, though, Smith will save us as opposed to Dave Bassett and Mickey Adams. But, yeah, what was it like under Taylor? Was he as bad as what we probably think he is, or
what I would say is you could look at Brendan Rodgers potentially taking him in a similar direction, but I think there's different causes. I think Brendan Rodgers had injuries and other factors. I think the biggest factor we had under Peter Taylor was he was signing players like Junior Lewis and Trevor Benjamin and players like that. You know, lovely lads, but were never Premier League players. And that's not been disrespectful for them, but they were never at the level where we were competing at the top of the Premier League when he took over. You know, being that team up and around sort of fifth and sixth in the Premier League on a regular basis to then signing those players, and they were never, ever going to be good enough. And that was the factor there. Peter Taylor was... I played under Peter Taylor for the England under-21s as well. And actually, he was a big factor in getting me into the full England squad with Glenn Hoddle. So that progression. But Peter Taylor was a very good manager of younger lads. I think he was very good with the under-21s on a basis where you'd come in and you'd see him for a week or so in terms of a training camp and then playing a game. Very knowledgeable on the game. He was a bit of a character that liked to get involved and be your mate. But he could not handle big characters and he could not deal with the likes of, like I said before, the Jerry Taggarts, the Neil Lennons, the Elliots, the Steve Walshes. He didn't have it in him. He kind of wanted to be their friend at times, but also he didn't help himself. When he came in, he culled a few of those sort of players that have been around a long time, important players, and tried to change things quite quickly with those players that weren't good enough. And I always had a lot of time for Peter Taylor in terms of my England career, but as a manager of Leicester, I can't look. He wasn't great. He struggled. I think his entire time he was there. The biggest one for me was, again, I Martin O'Neill was always very honest. If you played under Martin, he would tell you how he's feeling and when he's going to do it and if he's not going to do it, whether you liked it or not. You know, you might disagree with him, but he would tell you what he felt. Peter Taylor's a bit different, and I remember I've been out for a couple of weeks at Leicester with a tiny hamstring tear or something like that. So I missed a couple of games. No, actually, it was to do with one of my knee injuries, but I was playing. And I was still playing with my knee, but it was fine. I could play with it, but I needed something like just a cartilage trim, like a clear-up in my knee, which had only taken a couple of weeks or so. And I can't remember what game it was, but he came to me, spoke to me after training and said, look, I know you need this operation, but I need you this weekend. You know, you're playing, I need to make sure you're right. You know, just be strong for me and we'll get it sorted out afterwards, but I really need you this weekend. And then, yeah, so I'm like, yeah, well, it's nice to be wanted. Do you know what I mean? I wanted to play. I could always play. And then I think it was the Friday, he named the team and I wasn't even in the squad. And I was like, just mugged me right off. And it was just little things like that, I think, that just got to me. And it's like, you just lose that little bit of respect for someone when they treat you in that manner. And I think that's where he did that. And I don't think it came out of malice. I think it came out of wanting to try and keep everybody happy. But in football, you can't do that. You've got to be honest with your players, whether they like it or not. You know, don't tell someone they're going to be playing at the weekend and then not have them in the squad at the weekend when he could have gone in for an op, you know, a week earlier and got it sorted out. It was irrelevant.
Yeah. Can you remember as well? This is going to sound funny, but it's my one memory of Peter Taylor. Can you remember he used to wear Leicester City club shop gloves? I'm wondering whether any of the boys used to take the piss because he was like a walking like advertisement for like they're the worst gloves ever. They had like LCFC on there. They were incredible.
Yeah, the players wear it at the same time.
Blue, white, written across.
Yeah. I swear the players used to wear them as well when it was cold.
Yeah,
so I remember Rackin' Bay.
I think Gilfie, it was Arne Gullarsson, I think he used to wear them. Yeah, Zagoraki, I think he used to wear them as well. Yeah, there's a few boys, but yeah, the biggest thing again, like he had this, it's only tiny little things, but we can put you off people, can't it? And I remember he was always doing impressions of Norman Wisdom constantly. And he used to wind the shit out of me. Yeah, it's not even funny. Do you know what I mean? It's like he's pretending to trip over. And you're like, you're a Premier League football club manager here, mate. You're not doing normal Wisdom impressions. You climb onto the training pitch pretending you're falling over. It was just, he didn't sign the right people, essentially. He kind of dismantled a squad that was still capable. You know, Martin left a very good squad. And he dismantled it quite quickly and upset a lot of those players, as I said, who had got that club to where it was and tried to put his own stamp on it, which he's entitled to do. But if you're going to do that, you've got to get it right. And he didn't by any stretch of the imagination. And signing those type of players was just, I was astonished.
Yeah, I mean, Darren, kind of then bringing it back to kind of here and now, I mean, we've spoken about the injuries. A big problem, I think, which is fair to say for Leicester over the last couple of years in terms of our demise, has been bad signings as well. Now, it doesn't matter what level of football you play at, you know, it's Sunday League or Premier League football. But I want to know what it's like as a Premier League footballer when somebody comes in and you instantly know they're not good enough. Because if you play in Sunday League and a lad comes in and you think they're a bit shit, it doesn't matter kind of how good of a nice of a bloke they are, they kind of never truly then fit into the team, do they? So what's it like when, you know, you mentioned like some Junior Lewis and Trevor Benjamin, you've told me stories about Trevor before, but what's it like when these players come in and the players instantly realise they're not up to the level? I mean, how much does kind of that disrupt the squad harmony and the kind of the banter within a dressing room?
Well, massively. And you find out within the first training session, because the lads start to talk, they come in and to be fair to those lads as well, it's not been detrimental to them. Trevor's the loveliest guy I'll ever meet. He's such a nice bloke. But I think even them themselves realised that this is a different level. So I think they became a bit more, Jesus, how am I going to fit in here? And when you've got a club like Leicester as well at the time, you had those type of players like the Neil Lennons, the Elliots, the Taggarts, you know, the Walshes, the Savages, the Muzzy Izzets, you know, the Tim Flowers, Tony Cotty, I think it was on Heskey. They just showed no mercy. It was like they're brutal lads. They're not going to like put their arm around them. You know, they'll kind of try and G them up and get them going, but they're, if they're not having them, they're not having them. And you knew within quite quickly the lads start to talk about them. quite quick, and you could sense it. I felt it when I come in, and I was record signing at the time, and I knew I could fit into the squad, but I felt the pressure of every training session when I first went there to be the standout, to be that record signing, because I knew when I came in, I think the wages had gone up as well. So then people started to look for new contracts. Mazzy did, and Sav went in, all started knocking on the door because they knew I'd signed. So I felt the pressure of that. So you have to produce, simple as that. Because as much as lads will be relatively nice to your face, you know yourself if you're not up to the standard. And I think that probably said a lot. And it didn't cause division in terms of the players, but it's almost like the players could then sense that this is perhaps a bit of an era that's coming to an end. And they felt as if those players had the ability to move on and find other clubs, and they did. You know, Neil Lennon went, Muzzy went, Sav went. You know, all these players started to disappear from the squad quite quickly because they're good players and they didn't want to be around something that was being brought in that they didn't feel was good enough. And do you know what? Perhaps that's not too dissimilar to the way we look at Leicester at the moment. There's been players that are born that haven't produced, and those ones that have been in the squad and done well over and been great servants for the football club are probably now looking at it and thinking, I've been fair enough, I've done my time here. It's time for me to move on. I don't think anybody would begrudge that either. But I always look at Leicester, and I know Leicester's had the amazing success they had, but I always looked at traditionally as Leicester and Norwich being a similar type of club in the way they've kind of gone up and down the leagues and produced players and for the youngsters coming through and then sort of had a bit of a, you know, roller coaster ride, always ups and downs. I've always looked at them quite similar like that. But, you know, Norwich are not winning the Premier League anytime soon. But what I'm saying is, you know, Leicester have now seemed to be having one of those troughs that's going to be going through. And that's a really difficult time for the club. I mean, again, we've got the facilities are absolutely fantastic. But, you know, I'm sure you lads would rather still be training at Beaver Drive than where they are if the team's producing on the pitch. You know, you'd rather have that.
Mm. No, mate, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's so many similarities between maybe that transition of O'Neill and Taylor and some of the things that maybe happened then and what we've seen over the last, 18 or so months here. Look, we'll let you go very shortly, Darren, mate, but I don't know if the lads have got any more questions. But do you think Leicester will stay up this season? I know that's perhaps a little bit of an unfair question because you're not watching us week in, week out. But what you have seen, do you think Leicester have got enough to do it? And do you think Dean Smith is the right guy to get us over the line?
Well, look, my dad always gives me a running commentary of how Leicester is doing anyway. So I speak to him on a regular basis about the games, and I obviously watch him every week on Match of the Day as well. So I do get enough to see enough of them. And, you know, I've not just got blue tinted glasses, and I do think they've got enough. I look at the quality they got in the squad. If Maddison keeps producing to the end of the season, you'll be all right. He's such a key player, within that team. I think losing Schmeichel was a massive loss. Not just in terms of his goalkeeping quality, but I think the leadership on the pitch as well. That was probably the biggest loss for me out of everybody. I think they'll stay up, but they've got one hell of a rebuild in the summer. And that's not just, you know, for me, the biggest sign in Leicester can make in the summer is keeping James Maddison. But I don't think that's going to happen. You know, he's going to move on. And it then takes a hell of a rebuild because, again, you then get players going, right, we've got future clubs to join here. I look at Leicester, who have just survived. The best players are now leaving. Is that a club I want to go to? So it's really difficult recruitment time for Leicester when you finish in a situation which they're going to it, and probably, you know, the best player is going to leave. And that's, unfortunately, I think the scenario at Leicester probably going to find themselves at the end of the season. But that's where manager and the recruitment team have to earn their corn to sign the right players to make sure you can not be in that position again next year. So then you can start to attract better players when they feel like you're a secure, you know, Premier League team.
Rick, you got one final question, then we'll let Darren go.
Yeah, Darren, how fast, what's your fastest you've ever done the 100 metres in?
Do you know what? I get asked this a lot, and I've never actually timed 100 metres. But I reckon if I wasn't a footballer, I reckon if I did like the 60 metres indoors, I reckon I'd win it the World Championships. Only because, like, yeah. I remember doing it like at school, and there was another lad who was a really good athlete and used to wear spikes. And I would always do him over 60 metres. And then he would always pit me on the line. He was a big, tall, powerful lad. So he'd always dip me on the line. But I'd always do him over 60, 70. Like, that was my game, is that off the mark, that quick stuff. And I remember actually when I came to Leicester and we had the fitness tests and stuff like that. We had to do the sprint test between the two laser guns and things. And I was by far the quickest at the club at the time. And I think it wasn't even far off the fastest in the Premier League. So Yeah, I never actually timed 100 metres. If it's 60 metres, I'm world champion. I'll take that.
But you won a few sports days, though, didn't you, in your time?
I did, yeah. Wearing my Tottenham kit to run in. Normally, that was the kit I used to run in, because it's like a white kit. But, yeah, it's all about impressing the girls. That's all it's about.
Right, mate. Any more abuse you want to give me before we let you go?
No, Jake, I would never abuse you, mate. You know that. You're a good friend of mine. And it's pleased. Actually, on a serious note, it's pleased to see you doing so well, mate. You know, we've worked a lot together over the years. And I know how hard you work in terms of your dedication, not just with Leicester, but with Talk Sport and stuff as well. And back those days of Master TV, we carried that station for many years.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's no longer running is absolutely no reflection on our broadcasting qualities.
That's because we left. That's like the team leaving, your best players leaving. That's what happens.
Exactly. Look, Darren, mate, some brilliant stories, some great insight. Absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, mate. So, yeah, really appreciate your time.
No worries. Take care. See you, lads.
Cheers, mate.
See ya.
There we are. So, brilliant. Darren Eady. So, yeah, me and Darren, I've worked with Darren for years and years, or I certainly did anyway, but known him for years. And an interesting, well, slightly interesting story is because obviously you guys know that I grew up in Norwich. That's where my childhood was. And at the time, obviously, Darren was playing for the first team, right? And I'm not sure if Leicester do similar things, but he used to do this thing called football in the community, where you'd, like, during the summer, there'd be like a summer camp and you'd go play football for the week. And it was one of, like, the final days, they take you to the training ground. You know, there's an opportunity to obviously play a little bit of football and meet some of the players. And obviously for me, you know what it's like as a kid when you don't support that team, but you love football. I was kind of begrudgingly going along, but didn't really want to be there because, you know, you're a kid and you want to just wear your Leicester shirt everywhere. But anyway, I did it twice. And on both occasions on the final day when I went to the training ground, you had to queue up and have a picture with one of the players. And, you know, I must be, because me and Darren have actually recreated this picture, I must have been maybe like 8 or 9 on both of them. And again, when you're at that age, you obviously know the team, but you don't know the history of the team you support, do you? So for instance, in the first ever year I did it, I had a picture of Ewan Roberts, and Ewan had obviously just left Leicester, but, you know, as a kid, I had absolutely no idea. So there's a picture of me and Norwich player Ewan Roberts. And then the following year, I then got a picture of Darren Eady, who then ended up being a Leicester player a year or so later on. So yeah, the first and only ever two times I did that, I somehow managed to get the only two pictures with Leicester links. But look, Darren's an absolute legend, worked with him for years. Absolute top bloke, and yeah, he's still covering Norwich City back there working for the football club. And yeah, and I think I can speak for all of us of similar ages when Darren moved to Leicester, what a player he was and really should have been. And unfortunately, as he mentioned, I think all together in the end, it was 24, 25 knee injuries, which is just absolutely horrific, isn't it? And that insight of the pain that he goes through. And again, knowing Darren the way I do, I know that now he can't really run for kind of any more than 15 or so minutes because of the pain and the chronic pain he has in his knee. So, you know, cycling and this, that and the other now is kind of all he can do. But top bloke is Darren Eady. So thanks, and I hope everybody appreciated the insights there. Jack, Darren Eady, it's a shame, wasn't it? He wasn't the player that he was at Norwich, because actually voted into their Hall of Fame, by the way, and only played 200-odd games. He was outstanding. And as he mentioned as well, he got into the England squad but never made a full cap. And those injuries just came at the complete worst and wrong time for him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big deal when he signed for us as well. So, because he was in and around the England squad at the time. I remember the goal he scored at West Ham. And yeah, I remember he used to wear the big Lecoq shirts that were always massive on him, like the collar was like huge on him as well. Like seriously quick player. Do you know one thing? I almost asked him about this, but I neglected to. You remember the feature they used to do in the club program? It was like At Home With. It's where they used to like tour the players' houses. Yeah. Do any of you remember this? Have I just imagined this?
I don't know.
Okay. Rick will remember it if he turns up, because I think Delcy's just turned up. But anyway, I vividly remember, and I've still got the programme somewhere, because Darren Eady had like a punch bag, but it was a full head and everything, which I was obsessed with and really wanted to get one as a result of it, because I thought that would get me fit as a youth. But he was obviously doing that because it wouldn't hurt his knee. But yeah, that was. Like those features, like At Home With, were unbelievable. I remember At Home With Mike Whitlow, and he just walked around the house wearing a Fox Leisure tracksuit. They were the best features. They'd never do that now.
No.
But there we go.
No,
yeah, slight tangent.
I remember actually seeing Darren's former house just outside of Norwich.
Has he still got the punch bag? That's what I want to know.
No, I can't remember, but whenever we used to have to like publish articles, you know, when you've got like, it's like a Getty Images system, and you'd always go in, I always used to go and pick the really old pictures of Darren, and I did this article in the Eastern Daily Press years and years ago, and it was him, you know, with his sports cars outside the front of his house, and this, that, and the other. And it, yeah, it was classic 90s football, but Darren was, you know, as you can, if you remember him, a bit of a kind of a, I don't know, like flair player. I don't know. He wasn't, yeah, a lovely guy, not a bad. Do you know what I mean? I'm not quite sure. Like Spice Boy kind of player. It was almost one of them. But
I was going to say, Jake, that he was a bit flash. I remember his little.
That's the word I'm looking for, flash.
I remember his little blonde highlights, and he used to wear the white socks before they, you know, every player wears the white socks underneath now. But he'll be pleased because he's not lost his good looks, has he? Not quite as handsome as you, Jake, but he's
still got an unbelievable lid, by the way.
Yeah.
It's not bad. What was I going to say as well? Yeah, okay. And then the bet, right? So, I mean, yeah, it was a stupid thing to do, right? And I genuinely was going to get the tattoo on my backside. But, like, when 2 years passes, when tattoo parlours were closed, it kind of loses momentum, right? I'm sure you can understand why I then thought, you know what, maybe I can probably get away with not getting the tattoo. I am actually genuinely stupid enough to make another bet. And I would promise that I would go through with it. But I've seen you lads mention that if Leicester stay up, then I'd have to get it. I think that's a bit, you know, it needs to be a bit more ambitious than that, doesn't it? If I'm going to get someone inked on my backside.
Will you get Dean Smith with his £4 haircut on your ass if we stay up?
I'll get a Dean Smith haircut.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yes. Let's all have £4 haircuts.
Let's get £4 haircuts if we all stay up.
I'm going to have a bath full of Bombay Mix. I'll spend £500 on Bombay Mix if we stay up.
Jordan, what are you going to do?
I'm going to have to think about it. I'm going to have to think about it now. Rick's trumped us all there, isn't he, with the Bombay Mix and his obsession for Indian snack food.
No, we're all getting the same haircut. We all get the Dean Smith £4 haircut.
We all go into,
it's easy for me and Rick because I don't think we're that far off it. But
no, that's it. Jordan's fuming. Look, Jake could have a 99p haircut and he'd be all right.
My modelling career was going to be over. If I get that, you know, what work am I going to get with Dean Smith lid?
You could go and do some Dean Smith walk-ons in Norwich nightclub, the Chasers.
This is amusing, Jake. By the way, I googled Darren Eady earlier just to read a few things about him. There's an article on Sky that my mate wrote. It's just an article on Sky, and you're in one of the photos on FC Kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, that was so, as well as working on local TV together, so we worked doing Norwich together for about 3-4 years. And then when I first moved to London, I was working doing a football and food show, and Darren was one of the presenters on that as well. So then me and Darren then worked on this YouTube show for a little while, and that's where I made this stupid bet on this FC Kitchen when I was at Carrow Road with Darren. So yeah, that's the backstory to that one.
I've never even seen it, mate. What, so I'm going to have to dig out. You're going to have to dig out a few videos.
It's a YouTube show, which we only did for a year or so, and as you can tell, wasn't hugely successful.
Did you have Delia Smith on doing a few recipes?
Well, unfortunately, Delia does very, very little media since that famous incident.
Since she got arsed and got
since a bottle of wine.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, again, because having worked at Norwich, I know the head of media, who at the time it was his job to basically say, look, Dean, I don't think this is a good idea. But she was obviously insistent, you know, I own the club, I'm going out there. And yeah, it was a guy called Joe. And yeah, he was like, Dean, I don't think this is a good idea. And she generally has done next to no media since that point. She's so honestly scarred by that because she's a lovely, lovely woman as Delia. But yeah, as Rick said so eloquently, she was arsehole. she was right Shall we do who are you and then look ahead to Leeds?
Let's do it.
Jack, cue the music.
Oh, God. I haven't... Yeah, hold on.
Have you not?
Oh, no, no, I've got it. I've got it.
Oh, who is your daddy and what does he do?
You're going to have to point and play it.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Who are you?
You.
No, not me, you.
Yes, I am you.
Just answer the damn questions. Who are you?
Wait a minute. Who are you?
Right then. I am having slight technical issues here, so I can't actually hear the music today. So if you're watching on YouTube, I'm gesticulating saying, can I speak yet?
I thought you were asking whether it was playing, so I haven't quite finished yet. So apologies.
Oh, had it not? So, yeah, sorry.
Hopefully, I'm going to press stop, because otherwise it'll be in a loop and we'll have one of those with the last 20 minutes of the show.
Right, is it safe for me to talk and play Who Are You, yeah?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, Rick, you are stepping up to Quizmaster duties today, sir.
I am indeed. Right then. Got a nice little fancy for you, okay? Could be one of those that you might get quite easily, or we might still be here until midnight.
Right.
Quite easily, don't happen to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I think you might be all right on this one, Jordan. Okay, he was born on the 24th of July, 1989, so he's 33.
Same age as me.
I'm going to throw in where he was born, Brussels in Belgium.
Dennis Pratt.
Okay. Nicholas Pratt.
No, none of the Pratts.
Okay, next one.
Next clue, okay. I hadn't bothered to look after that. Okay.
nice.
Why? We signed him in 2010. And he stayed with us until 2012, but only made 8 appearances and scored 1 goal.
Nils Erik Johansson. Is that his name?
Belgian. Swedish. Jordan.
Swedish. Jordan. You are so bad at this game.
Look, if you don't guess, you don't get it, do you? So you've got to guess.
Win it, George. You're right, mate. But
Jake thought
Jake
thought Denzel from Only Fools and Horses looked like Zach Whitbread. So.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't. I literally said I don't watch Only Fools and Horses. I'm not having that slander.
It's not that Bakayoko guy that was a left back. Was that he wasn't born in? No.
No, it's not him.
Can somebody remind me 2010, 2012? Were we Championship or did that cross over League
One? That's League One, isn't it?
No, 2010 was. It was the end of Pearson, start of Sousa.
I'm so bad with.
It's
not Danny and Guessing. He's French, isn't he?
Yeah.
No, but good guess. I'm more than happy with that one. That's a bit closer to it. He only got
very
1 goal for us, though, this geezer.
He only got 1 goal.
I've got a good story about Danny and Guessing. One of my good mates used to be his agent.
Yeah, go on.
I'll tell you that. No, let's get on with this.
Is that the story?
Yeah.
Well, no, it was just once he rang him up and I think he was boasting. He said, Danny, it's Chris. Chris, your agent. And then he was really annoyed because he made a mug of him. But anyway, carry on.
Yeah, 8 appearances, 1 goal, 33.
I'm going to get this, but I need one more clue.
He must have played early on.
One more, Rick.
He was 5'8".
That's not helpful.
That was half a clue. Okay,
so he's not a centre. He's not a centre back, then, is he?
No, he was a midfielder. Another clue. He looked like Dizzy Rascal.
Sergio Hellings. No, he didn't play 8 games.
No, he was Dutch.
Yeah, no, but he might have been born in Belgium. It's interchangeable out there, isn't it?
True.
It's landlocked, isn't it?
Okay, next clue then. After 2 loan moves away to Doncaster and Chesterfield, he then signed in 2012 for Coventry City, and he did well for Cov.
Frank Musa.
Oh!
Yeah, Jake's got it.
Do you know what's criminal about that, Rick? is I worked for Chesterfield in 2012.
Oh, so, and he got 4 goals in 10.
Yeah, I seem to remember he was absolutely brilliant, but he got eclipsed because Luis Boa-Morte signed for us and he just couldn't move. He was terrible at that point.
He does look like Dizzy Rascal, though, doesn't he?
Well, that wasn't what helped me get it, no. But my kind of binding memory of Frank Musa was that he should have been
Rascal.
So much better.
He does look like Dizzy Rascal.
Where did we sign him from? Charlton or something?
Southend.
Yeah, I'm surprised he only played 8 times for us. I remember watching him thinking he's a player. And I'm thinking right in saying, Rick, when he went to Cov, he was very good there.
Yeah, he got 18 goals in 77 games for them, and he was decent.
Yeah, I always thought that he should have played more for us, and we should have persevered more with him. Because again, he was quite young at the time, and I thought there was a player there. But yeah, I'm surprised he only played 8 times, but delighted to get another win.
His career is odd as well. If you look through the, like, he came through the Anderlecht youth team and then went to West Ham.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, and then he's like Southend, Wickham, Us, Doncaster, Chesterfield, Cov, Charlton, Southend again, Walsall, Gillingham. Bit shit, isn't it?
Yeah, clearly there was a reason why he didn't kick on, because his ability was better than his career, I think.
I think that was quite a good one, Rick.
That was good.
Thank you.
It was niche. Like it.
Yeah. Happy days. Right. So have a chat about Leeds, shall we? Because it's been quite a quick turnaround this one, Tuesday night. Big deal, though, in terms of this one, then Fulham, and then, of course, then Everton. It's a wonderful opportunity, isn't it, to get some points and to put away from the bottom three. It really is. And Leeds aren't playing very well at all at the moment. George, what do you make of the fact that, A, we've got this game on a Tuesday, but we've now got so many Monday night games. Do you think this is going to actually play in our favour or against us? Because I actually think playing on a Monday night tends to kind of bring, particularly at home, the best out of the players. I actually quite like the fact that we're playing on Monday nights at home.
Yeah, this time of season, a lot gets made of kickoff times, doesn't it? And who has the worst deal of the kickoff times? Can work both ways, I suppose, but I think the advantage is you know what you've got to do. So whether we're going into that game, let's say we're going to the Everton game and Leeds have won, or well, it looks like it's just between us, Leeds and Everton now, doesn't it, really? Bournemouth aren't out of the woods, but I'm not worried about them immediately. So yeah, I think let's say Leeds win at the weekend. We, as an Everton, go into that game and we know what we've got to do on a Monday. So we've got, was it Everton, Fulham, Liverpool?
Yeah.
On Mondays, yeah. So.
Yeah, you got the games the wrong way. Yeah.
Newcastle's a Monday as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, like if we beat Leeds and we go into, they'll be playing before we play Everton, won't they, Leeds? I don't know who they've got after us, but you kind of know what you've got to do. I know, like, people say, oh, you've got to focus on yourself and don't look at what the other teams are doing, but let's be honest, everyone does.
Now we do, now.
And the players do as well. It's just PR nonsense, isn't it, when they say, oh, we're only focused on ourselves. So, yeah, I think, like, night game under the lights, Everton and Liverpool on Mondays, in theory, is decent. Fulham will be a good one. I'm not actually going to that, but 3 o'clock on a bank holiday Monday in May, that'd be quite a night at the library. And then Newcastle, after watching today, I'm glad I'm definitely not going to Newcastle. But yeah, I think it works in your favour, potentially. I don't think it adds any added pressure, really. So I think it can only benefit us.
Yeah. Jack, what do you make of the fixtures now? Because, you know, it's at that point of the season now where we absolutely should be looking when we're playing, who we're playing, who everybody else is playing, and just refreshing the league table every 5 minutes. I have to say, I think the Newcastle game away is the only one where I'm particularly fearful. I think, you know, now we've won that game against Wolves, now we have a little bit of momentum, we have some kind of platform to build off, and now look at them fixtures and think, do you know what? We're all right, and I quite like these games. I like when they are and who they're against.
I'm absolutely shitting it. It's football's so annoying, isn't it? You go through the high of yesterday, and we win a game and you're having a beer after the game thinking, oh, it's great. Oh, this is really good. And I wake up this morning and go, we're playing again on Tuesday night. It's a massive game. Like, my emotions are going to be all over the place on Tuesday. Probably won't get much sleep after the game because I'll either be pleased we've won, gutted we've lost, or like still being anxious about it if we draw. So, and I've looked at the fixtures, and Wolves is the first team that we've done the double over. If we replicate the fixtures in the last six games from the rest of the season, we'll get 9 points, which would be enough, I reckon. I've also had a quick look at the table today and worked out if 35 points gets us safe, it would do in all but one of the last 8 years. So, I think the fixtures look good. I think hopefully we can kick on from where we are, but it doesn't make me any less nervous. In many ways, I've got hope now, which if we'd lost yesterday, yeah, I would just be resigned to going down, and hope's the worst thing in football. Because that's what gets you. But yeah, we've got a fighting chance, but we're only out of the relegation zone currently on goal difference, and we're looking at the Leeds game thinking that should be a shoo-in. They're going to get a reaction at some point, I'm sure. So it's a huge game, although hopefully if we can get Madison and Barnes back, that makes a massive difference for us, because that's probably not been talked about a lot of the win in the game yesterday. We've won that without our two top scorers, our two best players this year, which is a credit to all the lads that played yesterday, really.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, it's massive, isn't it? And a great point by Jack. We haven't mentioned that at all. No Madison, no Barnes. I don't think we're going to see Patson Daka play on the wing again. Bless him, he worked hard, but it's not his position, is it? It's absolutely massive. We've got those two back. Leeds are playing pretty dreadfully at the moment. Of course, people aren't going to get ahead of themselves and think, yeah, this is an easy game. But it is a bloody great opportunity, isn't it, to kick on and get another result?
Yeah, it's massive. I think, these two games are going to be pressure situations, and we don't deal well in pressure in the last few years. But yesterday, I was looking at Dean Smith wearing a cord and bits. He didn't give a fuck. He didn't. The bloke is just as honest as the day's long. Like, he's that sort of bloke that, when you go on a stag do and there's dads on there and you're absolutely garried out your face and you've been a complete cretin and you're into the next day and he's there, arms crossed, not bothered, had best part of 30 points, could still do a crossword and batter you at it. I genuinely think we're in safe hands with him. I do. And he said the right thing. He wasn't getting ahead of himself yesterday. He said yesterday means nothing if we don't follow it up. And we've now got two games where they must not lose games. Obviously, if we win them, we're in such a good position. But he won't go into them thinking we can't lose. He'll go into them probably playing 4-2-4 again and saying, right, we'll take them. And, Harvey Barnes is always good for a goal against Leeds. So, I fancy us. I do.
I hope he doesn't play 4-2-4, because it was, the first half was carnage. Like, at times, it was complete chaos. And we haven't really talked much about when I got wind that the team might be different to the one that was going round a little bit early. And I couldn't quite believe what team he'd put out to start with. It made no sense to me whatsoever. But at the same time, we've tried everything else and it hasn't really worked this season. So I can't really knock him for trying something completely mental. But I quite like the idea of Dak on the wing, because we haven't got that much pace in the side without Barnes. So just put him on the wing. I mean, he wasn't very good. But I mean, it's sort of got something out of them, and he worked quite hard, didn't he? So yeah, and Sumari clearly had a really good game. So I mean, who knows what team he's going to put out on Tuesday night? He might, just not play Madison because he'll keep the same team if they won. I don't know.
Yeah. I know that is
a bit fishy. Him and Chowdhury are both out ill, weren't it yesterday?
Was Chowdhury out ill? Was he?
Yeah, both live in Nottingham. Wonder if they've been on the piss on Friday night.
Good spot, Detective Flair.
Yeah,
nothing gets past you, Rick.
You can't fucking piss a pisser, can you? Oh, no, I've been there. We've all been there.
I think Madison and Barnes have got to come back into the team for me. But Rick, yeah. I wanted to ask you something. Your assessment of Dino is absolutely bang on. After Thursday's Twitter space, I just want to go for a curry and a few beers with Dino now.
Yeah.
But I was thinking this earlier, regardless of what division we're in next season, would you keep him?
Yes. Change your tune, George.
Let's not do that yet, though.
No. Can we not? We've won one game. Can we not get ahead of ourselves?
Sweet beans are made of this.
If he keeps us up, he does, and he has earned the right to have 6 months next year at the job, personally, unless Potter's available.
I think it depends, right? Because if he keeps us up like Nigel Worthington kept us up, then it's kind of like, okay, fine, thank you for coming in and doing that. But, you know, we're going to look longer term here. You know, it is one game. And as I alluded earlier, I actually get really good vibes about Dean Smith. I didn't at first. You know, I was very much like, underwhelmed is the most polite way I can put it. But, you know, as I said to Darren, sometimes you just get managers and clubs who are a good fit. And I just get, I mean, they actually are very different personalities, in that Pearson is a lot more abrasive than what Dean is. But I do kind of get that safe, warm, fatherly figure vibes from Dean Smith. And I kind of feel like it may just fit. And I might just think that he might just be the manager that we need right now. That, it might not be someone that's going to take us into Champions League football. But I think, I don't know. As I said, it's only one game, so I don't really want to have this conversation right now. But everything I am hearing, Jordan, and the feeling that I'm getting from him, it has flipped completely since the start. And I am liking what I'm hearing and seeing.
He's a good, honest bloke, isn't he? That's what he looks like. He's a good, honest fella. Yeah. So you can't really knock him, I don't think.
I think he's definitely, talking like analogies, Rick, you can probably add to this one. If Dean Smith goes on holiday, I'm almost certain he owns a pair of like Union Jack
shorts. Union Jack shorts, 100%. Yeah. I knew what you were going to say. I knew exactly what you were going to say. Vibe.
He loves an all-inclusive in Spain, doesn't he?
I
don't want to edit it, so please don't do an all-inclusive analogy.
I won't. But he is the 18-20 stone Sunderland scaffolder. What a man! You'd have sangria with him. You'd have everything.
Calamari. He likes calamari.
Maybe that's what Madison did with it. Not very well.
I'd have some onion rings with him.
Loves karaoke.
I'm not getting carried away on Dean Smith yet, but I would need to keep John Terry at the football club at all costs, regardless of what division we're in. Like, the man is he's doing a job with that defence. There was a noticeable, like, we actually were getting at the ref yesterday a little bit more than we normally do, and we weren't standing for any of Wolves' nonsense because they're a horrible team. And there was loads of nonsense. They do that a lot. Their manager is horrible like that. But I think we need to keep JT at all costs. I think that's the sort of character, you know, if Rodgers had employed him a little bit earlier, I think it might have gone a different way. If, say, he brought him in the summer or something, just to give a different voice in the changing room. So I think the players will listen to him. I think, you know, Darren was talking about being scared of Martin. If Terry goes off at half time, you're listening, aren't you? And you're doing whatever you're told. I've been told in decent nick.
I've been told, Jack, that Terry's not a ranter and a raver, which is interesting because a player, he had that scary centre half quality. But as a coach, he's quite considered and reserved.
Yeah, but if he goes, but he's always had that air of him. It's like a parent analogy, you know.
I was going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, my dad doesn't go off at me very often, but when he does, you don't want to be in the room when he goes off.
Have we got any update whether John Terry is still living at Seagrave? Has he left Seagrave?
Yeah. He was there this morning. He was there. He'd been for a 5K run this morning.
He just doesn't leave.
What I found interesting about John Terry as well, if you can watch some of the extended highlights of yesterday as well, that I've seen, they panned to him and he got his headphones
in. He's got AirPods in.
He got his AirPods in, but he was really focused. He wasn't quite like Shakespeare. Like, he's obviously, you know, he's got what he's focusing on, and he was so, like, in the zone. And then, like, got to half time, I think, was one of the clips you see him, and he's straight down there. The man's obviously, like, I do think it's the complete package with these three. It's not just, you know, the manager and a couple of yes men. They are, I mean, every time Dean Smith talks, he'll name check John Terry and about organising the defence. Well, when does a manager do that about their staff? They never do. You know,
Brendan,
I do think it'll be hard to keep Terry because he likes living in Surrey and in London. Would he want to stay up here? But maybe if you could just keep him part-time, come up for a few days a week, come up for match day, that would probably be enough. You know, if that's the, I think them three together, we've got to do it if he does stay.
Biggest disappointment for me, sorry, George, you go.
I was going to say, if he's struggling for anything to listen to on the touchline, get the podcast on, JT.
That's it.
Get Rick in it. That would be amazing, actually, if we got you live streamed into his ear.
Yeah.
The sort of tactical decisions he would make midway through the game, it would be extraordinarily chaotic.
But JT, get at the Wolves bench.
Yeah. I was telling left-footed wingers, it would really go against his principles, wouldn't he, at the back? He'd be, oh, get him off.
Open another bag of Bombay mix for Shaky.
That's it.
I was going to say about Shaky, no imagery of him with two balls under his arms, which is slightly disappointing at this stage, I think. Yeah. If we stay up, he's definitely got to do that in the middle of the pitch, hasn't he? Just walk around with two balls.
I think he'll need three or four juggling them under and then get one at the end.
Right. Lads, any other business, stage? Because, again, we've been really long. Anything else anybody wants to say?
Don't have any of the business, just that obviously we missed last week's pod because... Mm. Believe it or not, this is not our full-time job. And Jake was asleep.
And then he put his hand open.
He'd worked himself into a massive nap.
Mm. Yeah.
And Jake, you say we've been really long, but what people need to remember is they ain't here for a good time. They're here for a long time with us.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's my motto.
Right. And homework for everyone now, and this is something people can get involved with. Things that we should do if Leicester stay up. I want best suggestions, please. You can just send them on Twitter. I'm very much looking forward to that. Rick is going to have a bath with Bombay mix. I'm not sure I can follow through with a Dean Smith haircut. We got to decide.
You definitely follow through, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So what would you do if Leicester stay up? Let us know.
I know what we'll do. I've got one.
What?
Four IBS sufferers all have to have a chicken foul. Have you ever had a foul?
No.
I had a foul, right, the night before I went to Krakow for Euro 2012. I spent 10 days on the pan. I was getting my beers delivered into the trap. It was horrendous. We're doing that.
Down Paddy's.
Do you want to do that again?
If you stay up, you've got to get the job done.
I had medium in Paddy's last night, and oh boy, it was hot.
Oh dear me! Right, any other suggestions, please? Nobody vote for that one. Let us know. What would you do if Leicester stay up this season? We get a Dean Smith haircut or a bath of Bombay mix. Do let us know. Shall we do something Twitter Spaces, but do it a little bit better? Leeds, maybe on Wednesday. Yeah, we'll look to do that if people want another kind of podcast, but not a proper one. We'll look to do that on Wednesday. If not, could we play on then the Monday, don't we? So we're all going to be out of whack now.
Tuesday.
The schedule in terms of when we do these podcasts. But look, we'll send tweets out and try let you know as and when we do them. So look, finally, after, what was it, 10 weeks, got a win out of the relegation zone. We'll see where we are next Wednesday when we're back with you. probably on Twitter. Good luck to the lads on Tuesday at Leeds. Thanks once again to Darren Eady for joining us. Hope you enjoyed him. I thought it was great. Yeah, top bloke, Eady. And yeah, we'll see you all very, very soon. Thanks for listening.
Casey Kelly, USA, Darren Eady, fit to play. Lee Phil Pop had a shot, Danny Teato.
My lover's got no money, he's got his strong beliefs. My lover's got no power, he's got his strong beliefs. My lover's got no fame, he's got his strong beliefs. My lover's got no money, he's got his strong beliefs. One more and more, people just want more and more.
Sports Social Podcast Network.